Hi, this is Sci-Fi Talk, the podcast on how sci-fi, fantasy, horror, and comics help us explore our humanity.
Welcome to Sci-Fi Talk. I have a conversation with Andrew Jackson, a frequent guest on the show. We catch up about his upcoming work.
Recently, I just saw you stuck in an elevator with some of the Warehouse 13 folks and even some Star Trek people in there, too, or ex-Star Trek people.
That's right. Voyager. I had a lot of fun working on that show. It was nice to sort of get away from some of the rougher characters that I've been playing of late and get dressed in a suit for a change and be dangled 30 feet over a wall with a cement floor below me, with no padding, and being dropped. That was a first.
Sci-Fi Talk continues, so stay tuned.
And giving also a boost up for Joanne Kelly to get out of the elevator. That was fun.
Indeed.
That's great. How many days did you end up shooting that sequence?
I think I worked for four days on the shoot.
Wow.
Yeah, it's been a little while, but looking back on it, I'm pretty sure it was about 4 days.
What kind of set is it for, you know, they seem like, I've met them a few times at Comic-Con, they seem like a pretty fun group to hang around with.
Yeah, I mean, they move very, very quickly on the show.
Yeah.
Jack Kinney, the producer, is an exceptionally funny man.
Yes, he is.
He's been an actor, historically, he worked in the theater, and he really understands actors and is very good in terms of dealing with text. And because you're dealing with a group of people who are accustomed to working on a show on a regular basis, they can move through the material at an incredible pace. And a lot of these actors seem to have some stage background as well.
Yeah.
You really sense that while working on the show.
Mm-hmm.
So it was kind of like, you know, jumping into the deep end of a world I was unfamiliar with.
Thanks sure.
For reading the script and having done read-throughs and whatnot. But I don't want to say it's a complex show, but there's certain intricacies to the show that obviously one is unfamiliar with unless you've sat down and actually watched it over a period of time. So that I was, you know, being thrown in rather quickly and shooting a number of my scenes actually on the first day, right at the top of the day.
Wow.
It was very technical sort of acting experience, and then sitting around and listening to storytelling between takes was great.
Yeah, yeah. Well, there's some good experience on that show, I'll tell you.
Or listening to Saul Rubinek reminisce about Clint Eastwood and having worked with him and describing what it was like.
Yes.
Listening to a focus puller asking, you know, Clint Eastwood, well, what do you want me to do? And Clint would say, well, what do you think you should do? You know, what feels right? You know, apparently it was being likened to music, so you would actually instinctively listen to the scene and respond based on what your instincts dictate, mm-hmm. because every person on a set, in essence, is an expert in their field and is completely adept at being able to respond in the most constructive way possible. And I was really, really impressed hearing him in particular talk about his experiences watching Clint at work. Was great, because I've always had a fascination with him, both as an actor and a director.
And he's known for, like, doing one or two takes at the most. Because he flies through a day because, his whole plan is by 6 or 7 o'clock, he's done. And that's why how he can do it by just doing these one or two takes. He also surrounds himself with a very experienced crew that know exactly what he wants and have worked with him in the past. And that's part of his success of his formula. I heard recently you're in a film with another one of my favorite actors, Blue Mancuma, Jake and Jasper, A Fairy Tale. And you play a dad that has a son, and you've lost your wife. Kind of talk about that a little bit.
I mean, all three family members are suffering as a result of the mother and the wife's death. And my particular character is really struggling at trying to communicate with his children. It just really lacks the tools required to be able to help him deal with their grief, and he's really suffering himself. And in essence, the family is falling apart. The teenage daughter is leaving home. The son has completely isolated himself. He's not communicating. Sorry for the siren in the background.
They're coming. They're coming for you, Andrew. I knew they would.
Yeah, taking me away. They finally figured it out.
Yes.
He gets into fights at school, and the situation seems pretty dire. And ultimately, it's a ferret that the daughter brings into the boy's world.
Mm-hmm.
Who helps rescue the boy at one point and saves him emotionally, and in the end brings the family back together. So it's a very beautiful, heartwarming story. What's great about it is that there's also some really sort of darker undertones that keep it grounded in reality. It's beautifully shot, The director raised a lot of funds through people who are animal lovers.
Oh, good.
Who have a particular interest in ferrets. And the director felt very strongly that ferrets had not been well represented in the film world, mm-hmm. or in television. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of misconceptions about ferrets. And so she really wanted to tell a story that supported ferrets and animals in particular. So she got a lot of support financially on the project, as well as from crew members and whatnot who loved animals.
Oh, that's good.
And you knew that the animals were, they were the stars of the show. Mm-hmm. And that was perfectly fine by me because I'm an animal lover as well. And so, it was great to depart from, you know, some of the cop shows that I worked on, which are great. And actually do something with some heart.
Mm-hmm.
And, I had a really nice experience. It was great to get, you know, back to Vancouver and connect with some friends there.
Mm-hmm.
Did some auditions while I was out there. It was a bit manic, but it's a beautiful story. Beautifully, beautifully shot. And she had access to cranes and whatnot, which is, I mean, it normally would have been incredibly expensive, but a lot of people donated their time, which was great.
Now, there is a movie I heard about that you're in, The Blood of Pegasus, a TV movie that's supposed to be in post. Can you confirm or deny that, or what's your involvement in that?
To be honest, I don't know what's going on with that. I was asking the question just yesterday. What's happening with that film? We did it for the Sci-Fi Channel. I play a dad in that as well, running around in a toga, and I slay a dragon off the top of the film, which,
nice.
Of course, is a CGI dragon, so I never get a chance to actually see the thing, but I'm looking forward to seeing what I slayed.
There you go.
Don't know. I wish I could answer your question. I'm going to do some research. I do know the director. I should look him up and see if he can tell me what's happening with the project.
More than likely, it's probably going to show up on there on sometime in 2012, I would think.
Yeah. I would hope so, yeah.
So we'll look for that. That's great. And You're always busy with voice work. I know you have a lot of things going on, and one of the things that's been occupying your time is a series, an anime series called Bakugan, that you've been doing many, many roles on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm up to my 44th episode of Bakugan. I did 19 episodes on Beyblade. Both of these are Japanese anime series.
Yeah.
Very, very popular with young people. And it's really been a test of my ability to play a range of parts because they keep throwing more and more characters at me. And you know, I keep wondering what is sort of the limit of my range, vocal range, because I have to sort of keep reinventing various different characters. A lot of fun with one in particular named Dylan, who is a fellow. He's a digital weasel from New Jersey. And he's 19 years of age. And, I mean, obviously that's not something I'll ever cast in on camera. And, they were particularly happy with that performance. I wish the character actually had more episodes this season. But it seems like each season they re-audition and recast various different characters. So, it's been great for me because I don't sort of get bored with any particular characters. I'm constantly moving on and going into new areas and new territory.
Sci-Fi Talk returns in a moment.
And I know you're still doing other voices. I know you did some movie voice work for the Sucker Punch trailer that came out recently. So,
as of this week, did Horrible Bosses.
Oh, there you go. There you go.
I've done a series of different movie trailer voiceovers for 5 different big feature films.
Mm-hmm.
I worked with this one particular company. I guess they're the only game in town, really, in Canada anyway, that's doing this type of work.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel pretty blessed to be getting a chance to learn, you know, how to do movie trailer voiceovers, because it certainly could prove to be very, very lucrative
mm-hmm.
down the road, and I enjoy doing it.
One of the things I wanted to ask you about is, I know there is, in the last few years, there's definitely been a shift in production from Vancouver to Toronto, and I guess as an actor, you've had to, you know, adjust where you live and all that as well.
Yeah, I mean, actors, we're gypsies at heart, and we have to go where the work is. And you know, Vancouver and Toronto, we have over the years have certainly been pretty equal as far as like the volume of production.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, some people would argue that historically there was more television going on in Toronto and more feature films happening in Vancouver. And during the 90s, Canada was a great place to be as an actor on camera work because there was so much production going on. There's been a huge shift in the States as well. And of course, reality television has changed things a great deal. I recognized that things were changing in Vancouver, and plus I really wanted to pursue the voice market, whether it be commercial voice or animation. And particularly with the commercial voice, because Toronto's more of a business center, it was, I had far greater opportunities here. I've done about 24, 25 commercial voice spots this year to date. that's not something that I would have been able to do had I stayed in Vancouver.
Yeah.
And because of things that are happening with the tax system, they voted against the HST, for example.
Right.
A lot of production has left.
Yeah.
It's really, really hard. So I'm seeing a lot of actors who had spent years based in Vancouver coming to Toronto now.
Yeah, and shows like Stargate, which went on forever, it's over. They even auctioned off, you know, props and sets, so they're not going to get back to shooting anytime soon, unfortunately.
It's really disheartening. I mean, this is a great, you know, pool of talent and highly experienced crew and whatnot in Vancouver, and it's not being utilized, and it's such a shame. I mean, I want to believe that down the road that's going to change, but you know, certain decisions get made politically, and there's no way around it.
You have a role coming up on Covert Affairs. Can you tell us a little bit about that? I know you can't give away much, but...
Well, what was fun for me is I got a chance to play a Swede.
Oh, that's nice. I know you do accents really well, so it's not hard for you.
Thank you. And I played a Viking recently in a film for the CFC, where I spoke entirely in Icelandic, which was great, especially having to use snuff from the... fellow that was from the associated with the Icelandic consulate, who said that this was a test of manhood and something I needed to do before we began our lessons. But in this case, I spoke in English, although they did get me to speak one line in Swedish.
Oh, that's good.
Which was thrown at me minutes before we started shooting. And then they changed the line, so that was a little challenging.
Oh.
But I met the lead actress, Piper, who was, she's really stunning. She's very, very nice person to work with, and, see the clothes they put on. Oh my God.
Yeah.
She seemed quite happy about that. This is actually one of the more conservative outfits, and with a rather long zipper that extended from, up the entire costume.
Yeah, there you go.
Anyway, it was great. I had a lot of fun. The director was very nice, and it's just a 1D role on the show, and I've got a fairly full beard at the moment, and get the description of the character. What's a little intimidating is that they actually had brought an actor in for the episode to play another role who is Swedish.
Oh.
And what was surprising, too, is they have chunks of text spoken in Swedish in the episode, which is unusual.
Hmm.
So there'll be subtitles in the episode. It's always great to be challenged and get a chance to represent some other culture and language and whatnot. It's just, to me, that's like, I don't know, that's the candy.
Yeah.
In this business.
I have to give you props for working on, I saw you on my wife and I watch Criminal Minds all the time and watch it on Ion television as well. And we saw you in there, hanging out with those folks. That must have been, that's something that if I were an actor, that'd be a fun, that's a show I'd love to be on. That's a cool show.
That was a great team. When we shot that, it was called Quantico.
Oh, okay.
That was the actual pilot for the series.
Oh, wow. Look at that.
Which was shot in Vancouver.
Yeah.
And I really loved meeting Mandy Patinkin. Actually, I loved the whole main cast on the
show.
They were really, really great to work with.
Yeah.
He sang to me on set at one point and joked, but he was really, really supportive. And so that was great. You know, you see people you've always respected and admired, and you're never too sure what the experience will be when you meet them, and he more than lived up to the expectations.
Oh, that's great.
It was a very, very tricky material, because I'm obviously playing a psychopath that's keeping a woman in a cage and abusing her, and the material was extremely dark. And the actress that I worked with, the victim, was deeply method in her approach to the work, so... Even though we had known each other before, the communication that went on between us was very much based on, and this was her choice, was very much based on the relationship between the characters. So it was a very intense experience.
Yeah. And anything you have, coming up, movie or TV-wise, that we should look for you in besides Covert Affairs?
Well, I've already aired in Breakout Kings, and I shot something in Canada, which has not aired in the States as of yet, called King. I had a wonderful guest star on that. What else did I do? Against the Wall, but that's already aired. I worked with Treat Williams on that. So that was fairly recent. Jake and Jasper, of course, which will hit film festivals first.
Yeah.
And I'm also attached to, and I don't want to say too much because it's not, nothing is real until it's real.
Yeah.
But I have been working, and I did a promotional piece for a producer-screenwriter out of Germany. And it involves working with polar bears.
Oh.
And there's actually been talks in motion with the Polar Bear Federation, who are showing interest in me as a spokesperson.
Oh, nice.
It'll be a wonderful opportunity for me to go to places like San Diego and to Churchill, Manitoba, to work with the scientists, to work up close and personal with polar bears.
Yeah.
Which would be a dream come true.
Yeah.
And this would be part of the preparation for this feature film with a screenplay that is by far one of the best scripts that I have ever come across.
Oh, nice.
Best described as a Arctic Casablanca. The director who's attached now, that was his description. It's a beautiful, beautiful feature. It's very gritty. The dialogue is exceptional. And it's an amazing story.
Great.
And it would involve me working with very closely with these bears. And it's very rare you get an opportunity to see polar bears in feature films. And
yeah. It's
for good reason. Once they get past the age of 6 months, they are incredibly dangerous,
regardless
of the kind of contact you've had with them. So
wow.
One has to take great precautions. And they will travel over, I believe it's a kilometer. They will sniff you out and hunt you down to eat you.
Wow.
They're an extraordinary animal. They're very beautiful. I love them. But you have to respect the parameters. They are a wild animal capable of killing you.
Yeah, absolutely. Definitely.
It would be an opportunity of a lifetime. So I'm very, very excited about all aspects of both the project and certainly getting an opportunity to potentially be a spokesperson for this organization.
That sounds great.
But it's looking really, really good. So that's something I'm very passionate about at the moment.
Great. Andrew, thank you so much for taking time out.
Great to connect with Andrew again. Special thanks to Bill Wanstrom. This is Tony Tolato. Thanks for listening.